Welcome to the podcast of Mosaic Church, celebrating diversity within community.
All right, so Mark 5. Gabe last week touched on Mark 4, and I'm going to pull some of that back out a little bit because it does, Mark 4 really sets the stage for Mark 5. But let me just start by telling you guys, when I was about 25, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and I went there specifically to take a job with East Brentwood Presbyterian Church. Now, the reason I tell you the name of the church is not because of the Presbyterian part, but because of the Brentwood part. Now, if you are familiar with Nashville, then you will know this. If you're not, you likely won't, but Brentwood is one of the wealthiest zip codes in all of America, and it is the wealthiest zip code in Nashville. Now, that was, 13, 15 years ago, so it could have shifted at this point, but at that point, that was what was going on, and you could drive anywhere within, 5 minutes from the church that I worked at, and there were just mini mansions everywhere, and all the youth pastors called it the Golden Ghetto. Because the attitude and the activity and all that went around with it was just horrible, but they had every opportunity laying out for them. But here was the interesting thing, and this is why I bring it up, because I lived in downtown Nashville. So I lived on a little street called Love Circle, and it's this hill that goes up and overlooks downtown. Beautiful place. And so that's where I was kind of at. But I drove down to Brentwood, and Brentwood's only about 10 minutes south of the city, every day. And as I drove into Brentwood, on top of lowering the property value when I drove my Ford Explorer there into Brentwood, I experienced a shift because I could be anywhere within a mile of my house and see kind of extreme poverty and homelessness. In fact, there was a Tower Records just about a mile and a half from my house that we would go to all the time. And the thing with this Tower Records was you couldn't get in or out of the Tower Records music store without being hit up by 3 or 4 panhandlers. And I can tell you a couple stories of guys. I will tell you a quick story. There's a Chili's restaurant right next to it. So one Sunday, my roommates called me as I was driving back up from church. They said, "Hey, meet us at the Chili's. We're going to eat lunch there." And they were all heathens, so they were just getting out of bed and going to Chili's. And, I'm the spiritual one. I'm coming in from church already, but I'm just kidding. That's not true, but that is true, but not the heathen spiritual one part. And so I meet them there, and there's a guy out front panhandling because that was just the area. And, I was like, I can't walk into church. And I can't read Matthew 5:42, right? After Jesus tells them, turn the other cheek if someone hits you in the face. Give them your cloak. Give them your tunic. And if someone asks of you, do not turn them away. And I'm like, I can't reconcile that. And then tell this guy, sorry, bud. But I really didn't feel comfortable. So I said, there's a Wendy's just right down here. It's on the backside of Vanderbilt. I said, let's walk down to the Wendy's. So as me and this guy walked, it's about 3 blocks, he and I are just talking. He's telling me a story. And I remember, he was telling me a story about brokenness. And he wasn't, he's like, I messed up. I got on drugs. I did this, that, and the other. And this is what it cost me. And he's telling me this story. And I remember we're standing in line because it was lunch hour at Wendy's. And this guy just looks down and he starts crying. He's like, man, just look at my hands. He's like, I just worked too hard. And his hands were cracked and broken and bleeding. Like there was actual like red. I was just like, goodness gracious. Like, I don't understand this, right? Like, this is not my life. This is not my world. And so I bought him whatever. And then we went outside and we walked back down to Chili's. He thanked me and he went on his way. He got on his bike and took off. And, but you could just experience this anywhere in Nashville. And I experienced a couple different stories like that. In fact, the church helped support a feeding ministry in downtown Nashville called Room at the Inn in Edge Hill. United Methodist Church kind of did this other feeding thing. And they would do stuff, but you could drive 10 minutes from this where there was all kinds of homelessness and see just mansions everywhere and foreign cars. And the whole deal, and it was hard to reconcile, right? It's hard to kind of, when you see this thing where men and women are kind of thrown away on one side, you have to ask yourself kind of some questions like, does God really care about this? When you see families like huddled up on the street corner in the rain because they got nowhere else to go, these, you know, it's heartbreaking. And if we look at Mark 4 and then going into 5, it's interesting what happens. At the end of Mark 4, as they've been, the crowds are pressing around Jesus and they get on the boat and they're going across the water. And then what happened? You remember from last week? The storm came. And it woke the disciples up. Or in fact, we kind of get the hint that maybe they were never even slept because of the storm. But Jesus had no problem with that, right? And they wake up and they ask Jesus the question that I think we all ask in those kind of situations. And maybe for you it's different, you know. There's all kinds of sad things that we can see, and we have to ask this question that the disciples ask of Jesus that night: do you even care? That's the question that a lot of people ask of the church. And so when we don't have a fantastic answer, like we feel insecure or irrelevant or whatever it is, but that is the question that we are forced to ask, is do you even care? And then probably the second question is, can you even do anything about it if you do? And that was a question that Jesus both answered that night for the disciples, but even when they get here in Matthew 5 and they get to the other side of the lake, they're able to, Jesus continues to answer in the way that he acts and reacts. So let's kind of begin at the beginning of Mark 5. And so they went across the lake to the region of the, I have no clue, I'm just going to be honest with you, Gerasenes, we'll call them. Jesus got out of the boat. Now, remember what just happened on this boat trip? They nearly died. They thought they were going to die. They get to the other side. You would imagine, if you've ever been on a plane with lots of turbulence, or you've ever been on a boat that was not a good experience, or in a car ride. I remember riding with, y'all remember our friend Bailey, who used to play bass with, I rode in a car with him one time. And when I told my wife when I got home, I said, I just wanted to kiss the driveway when I got home. Let's just stop and pray for Bailey and his driving. I'm just kidding. It was just like, if you've ever been in that situation, or I've been on planes that had horrible turbulence, and man, when I landed, I just wanted to get down and kiss the ground and just lay there for a second and enjoy like stable ground. And you can imagine the disciples are probably like that. They finally get this storm calmed and they get to the other side and they just want to jump off, kiss the sand on the sea, on the shore there, and just chill. And that's not what they can do, because it says this wild man comes running at them. This demon-possessed man just comes charging right at them. Not the best environment. So they went across, and when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. Not the place you want somebody to meet you from either. For this is where he's coming from. This man lived in the tombs, and no one can bind him, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and he fell on his knees in front of him and he shouted at the top of his voice. These guys have just gotten off a boat where they almost died, and this is what they see right when they get off. And he shouts at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Jesus again and again, not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside, and the demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." So he gave them permission. The impure spirits came out and went to the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending them, which is also, like, can you imagine almost dying on a boat, getting out of the boat, and this is the first thing that's happened. A crazy man comes running out of you, starts having this argument with the guy that you're kind of, and then the next thing you know, you see a herd of pigs just run into the water. Like, I just want somebody to stop and say, what is going on here? You know, this is crazy. And those tending the pigs ran off and reported in the town and countryside. The people went out to see what had happened. They came to Jesus and they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed in his right mind, and they were afraid, which is the proper response, I would imagine. And those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. And the people began to plead with Jesus, leave this region. And as Jesus was getting in his boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him, and Jesus did not let him, but said to him, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you, how he's had mercy on you. And so the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. A couple things that we want to pull out of this first 16 verses. And the first is what we kind of harped on right at the beginning. The disciples, they're over on the other side, the crowd's pressing around Jesus to the point where they're almost crushed. They get on a boat to get away from it, and almost die on the boat. The second they get out, crazy man's running from the tomb. We read in Matthew, when we read the same story, there's a hint that maybe the dude didn't have any clothes on. Just ridiculous scene. Being and going out on mission is never safe. The interesting thing, Jesus is always safe. Like, Jesus was in control. He knew what was going on. He wasn't. But Jesus, oftentimes, when he calls us out onto a mission, it's not in the areas that we're safe. Now, it's not necessarily physical harm. Sometimes it's, you know, safety in relationships or whatever. But moving out into Jesus, moving out on a mission with Jesus is never where it's comfortable. I think about just the boat trip, right? Not the storm. I'm just talking about where they left. Where they left from was the area they were used to being at, the Capernaum. Like, it was this area they were very familiar with. It was Jewish. Everything about it was Jewish. They go across the sea to the land of the Gentiles. Completely unfamiliar territory. Jesus was always calling the disciples into places that they were not necessarily comfortable or familiar with. And that happens with us as well. He doesn't keep us in those comfortable places, but Jesus was always safe and in control. Like, we can open up our homes and we can open up our lives and we can open up our pocketbooks and we can open up, you know, all that we have and be open-handed about all that Jesus has given us, trusting that he's big enough to cover anything that happens. Jesus did not just tell us this, right? Jesus doesn't just say, trust me with everything and it's going to be okay. He modeled it for us. He took the disciples out. They freak out because of the storm. Jesus was not all concerned about the storm. He just told the storm, calm down. Jesus modeled it for us to the point where he was almost killed a few different times. He was never scared about that. Death wasn't his ultimate worry. I think it's how Paul and Peter and John and those disciples, those people who saw it, and others who have been martyred for the name of Jesus over the years can move into that space without fear and in boldness because they come to the realization that God is in control of it all. Now, if being safe and secure and happy and wealthy and healthy here on this earth is the ultimate goal, then he's not doing a good job. Because we all die. Some of us are poor, right? Some of us have loss in our life and in our hearts, and some of us miss things. And sometimes God intervenes in those situations. We have situations where the guy who had the mental illness was healed. We know situations where that's not true, right? We see people in this story who are healed. The woman comes up in a few verses from here and touches the hem of Jesus' garment while Jesus is on his way to go to Jairus' house, right? To heal, to see about his sick daughter who dies while they're on the way. And like, Jesus restores those things. But what do we also know? John the Baptist was beheaded. Jesus did nothing about that. He wasn't concerned about it. Why? Because he had eternity in his mind and on his heart. It says in Romans that God has put eternity on the hearts and minds of men. That is the ultimate goal. And so sometimes we get that thing that we're praying for. But we're all going to die one day, right? Sickness will overtake us. Death will take us over one day. We're not for this body, but we enter into a reality of the eternal. And that's what God has his mind set on. He said, it's more important for me to put myself and you in unsafe places so other people can know and understand the eternal nature of the kingdom of God and can enter into that, rather than to keep you safe and no one else ever know that. Right? But the other thing about this story is that Jesus was accessible. Jesus, imagine just for a moment, you can picture whatever church in your mind, big or small. We see it as the church sizes grow a little more here, but I've seen it in smaller churches as well. Where the crazy, the mentally ill, the possessed come into the church. They usher them away from the pastor and they corner them off. And you can't bug this person at this time or this. Jesus was never that. Jesus was accessible to this man. He had the crowds pressing in on him. He sails across the lake. We can imagine just to heal this guy. Because what happens after this? He goes right back. They ask him to leave, and so he leaves. You think Jesus was not in control enough to know that those people were going to ask him to leave after he does this one miraculous act? Jesus made himself accessible to this one mentally ill guy who was likely running around the tombs naked and screaming at people and trying to beat them up. And they said he was so violent. And in the Matthew's account said they were so violent people didn't even go past him. That Jesus made himself accessible. There were a lot of examples in the American Christian experience where those who are higher up are shielded from the people. I have known examples where they even have bodyguards. And there's all kinds of examples and reasons why, but Jesus, like none of them are better than Jesus, right? Jesus had the crowds, but he made himself accessible to everyone. That should convict our hearts when we try to protect spaces to say, no, this part's mine. This part isn't anybody else's. This part's mine. I'm protecting this. Jesus never did that. He made himself completely available. So available that, I'm jumping ahead, hopefully you've read Matthew 5, but so available that he's on his way to Jairus' house to see about a sick daughter, and a woman touches the hem of his garment and heals him, and Jesus immediately senses power goes out of his goes away from him. He turns around and says, who touched me? His disciples said, what's wrong with you? The crowds are pressing around you. Everybody's touching you. And the lady has touched him and she's been healed. Jesus stops and can you imagine being Jairus? Your daughter's sick. There's nothing you can do about it. You've got this one guy who has this miraculous power and you've heard about it. Everybody in the region has been talking about it. And he's coming to your house. Let's get there. Let's get there as fast as we can. What do we know that happens later in the story? His daughter dies while they're on the way. He wasn't even fast enough, but he's saying, let's get there as quick as we can. And Jesus stops. I wonder if they would have got there if Jesus not stopped. Didn't matter, right? End of the story is Jesus raises his daughter from the dead, in case you haven't read Matthew 5. But Jesus stops and he made himself available to this woman. But Jesus was also able. Right? Here's a guy that nobody wanted to mess with. The religious leaders, the regular people, whatever religion they had there in the land of the Gentiles, like nobody wanted to mess with him. They chained him up out at the tombs. They kept him there. They kind of quarantined him. He didn't even have a name, for goodness sakes, right? We don't even know the name. We just know the condition that he had. Nobody could do anything with him. Not even the chains could keep this guy in place. The same with this woman, right? She has this issue of blood. And if you go back and read, we won't go through the Old Testament history, but if you go back and read in Leviticus, when women were bleeding, they were not allowed with the rest of the people. They had special places they had to go. They're back in the Jewish area at this point, right? This lady has taken an unbelievably huge leap of faith that if she can touch his garment, she's going to be healed, or at least if she can't get to him, he's going to get healed. If at least touch his garment, because if she's not, there will likely be dire consequences for her, because she's brought herself, an unclean woman, into a space around and in crowds of people where she was not supposed to be. Jesus was able to do it. Jesus was able to heal the guy with the legion of demons. Jesus was able to heal the woman who nobody else could help for the last 12 years. Jesus was able to do it. We go back to those questions that the disciples are asked. Do you even care? Can you even do this? And Jesus showed time after time that he did care, that he was able. Jairus' daughter, of all those things, probably the one that was most impossible. He's on his way to his house. His daughter's sick, and they come and say, yeah, it's too late. She died. Jesus said, let's keep going. He gets there. He doesn't allow anybody else in the room with him, right? Because he says, hey, this girl's just asleep. Don't even worry about it. They're laughing at him. Not like this is funny, but like, you know, like you're crazy kind of way. Because this girl is dead. Jesus gets to the house in a commotion of wailing and mourning. And he lets the mom and dad and Peter, James, and John go up with him. And all he does is he walks up in the most impossible situation. Death, I think we can all acknowledge, is the... Like, if there's one thing that we know, like, before death happens, we're hopeful Jesus heals. We're hopeful that Jesus is, that God has created doctors with enough intellect to create certain things that, so it, when I consume it, it's going to physically heal my body if he doesn't, like, supernaturally do it. Or that we can go to therapists or do whatever it is to heal this hurt or this mental illness or whatever it is. But death is that finality. It's like, I'm trying to get there, and it dies. It's like, God, couldn't do it in time. And Jesus was still able. He goes in there, tells a little girl to get up, and she gets up. But here's what I think Mark is trying to tell us. More than the fact that Jesus does care and that Jesus is able, think of the people that Mark puts together in this story. He puts together these disciples who were all chosen by Jesus. Kind of gives them a special place, right? Because they were chosen by God in the flesh. And you got Jairus, who was this leader. He was held in high esteem. He was one of the in crowd, which we would make sense in our brains. And then you got the guy in the tombs who's running around naked, crazy, violent. And he takes this woman who should have been in her place, away from the crowd, away from everybody else, basically ostracized because her issue doesn't seem to ever be able to be fixed. And Jesus takes all of them and puts them together. And I think what Mark is trying to tell the reader of this book, us today, is that all of us are in the same place. We can't ever say they or them or the other. It's all of us. This is what we all need. None of us are exempt from it. We can't ever get to the place where it's like, oh, I know the Bible, I'm good. I know the gospel, like this is, I'm in a special place. Because we're all going to blow it. Every one of us, just as bad as these other people. Jairus' need was real. He needed Jesus, even though he was the religious leader. He had a need that only Jesus take. The woman with issue of blood, she needed Jesus. She had an issue that only Jesus could handle. The man out of the tombs, they all needed Jesus. None of them were on a different tier. And none of them had different access to Jesus. And none of them had different availability to Jesus. And Jesus had enough power and the ability to handle every one of those situations. They all needed Jesus. We can look at the news channels these past few weeks. And what the news has been really good to do in the last 10 years or so is just pit two sides against each other. And depending on which news source you're looking at, they're both the exact same. But depending on which one you watch is depending on which side is bad, right? And it's not just they're bad and we have disagreements, but it's like they're evil and they're wrong and they should be kicked out of society, you know. That's how it has pitted itself. And we can look at that, and as a people who understand this and are in the kingdom of God and are followers of Jesus, we cannot allow that to happen and say that we're better or different, or we are different. That's okay. But our differences do not equal any kind of tiering on, you know, who's higher and who's low is important. But they all had a need, and it was Jesus. And that's what each one of us brings to the table, is nothing but our need. None of us offer God anything but our need. And he gives it all. Now here's the interesting thing. Let's go back to the beginning of the story. The people who were in this town, the Gerasenes or whatever, right? What happens? In each one of these, Jesus disrupts something. But really, when he comes to this story, the first story, he really disrupts it, right? Because what happens? He sends the pigs. Now, you would imagine these people, it doesn't really say anything about it, but you would imagine these people who are herding pigs. I don't know if that's what you do with them, but these pig farmers, I guess. They're out there, and when they're, if you ever worked around a farm, when whatever it is you have is gone, your potential for income is gone, right? It doesn't say they ever got mad at Jesus. It just says they were scared. Jesus came in and caused a disruption into their life. And they asked him to leave. And I think for us, that has to be a stark warning. Because there have been things in my life that I have seen, that I've experienced. There have been times where I've read the Bible and I'm like, why does it say that? I don't want it to say that. I want it to say it's okay to hold a grudge, especially if someone did something really bad. At least for a year. You know, even if it gave us a time frame, and then it's like, okay, then you have to give it up. But at least for a little bit of time. Like, I wish it said that. I wish it said love all the people who love you back. Right? Like, it causes a disruption in my life when I read it and it says, love those who don't love you. And I've told you all this before. I'll confess again, I'm not good at that. Every morning I do a little liturgy with my boys in the car, a little catechism, if you will. If you grew up in a Lutheran or Methodist or Catholic church or Episcopal church, you kind of had to learn some catechisms at some point in your history. And I do a little catechism with my boys. And I mainly do it because I don't want them to grow up to be like their dad, right? Who can hold a grudge, who doesn't easily love his neighbor. And so I'll ask them a series of things about their day. How's your day going to go? You know, why is it going to go that way? Tell me what you're going to do, you know? And then I said, well, are you going to be a good friend? Or are you going to be nice to everybody? When I ask them, I said, what happens if they're not nice to you? And I've taught them to say. And so now when I say, so, okay, and what happens if they're not nice to you? I hear from the back seat, I'll still be nice to them. Why? And, you know, Jude's like, because when we weren't nice to Jesus, he was nice to us. And then Ben comes up with his own thing. Like that time I wasn't good the night before Christmas and Jesus still let Santa bring me a gift. Which we don't really talk about that in our house, about the big S guy. But we don't disclaim it either. We just kind of try not to even engage it a whole lot. So I don't even know where he got it, but this is Ben. Like, you guys have met Ben, but they had this idea that even if, because I want them to be better than I am, because I'm not like that. Like, if someone wrongs me, I'll bow my back, you know? I'll be ready to, and I have all the justification in the world. And so when Jesus causes disruption like that, you know, for me, it's just like reading scripture. Or I've had times where people have come and spoken in my life and say, Friar, that wasn't right. You know, that was wrong. You probably shouldn't have done that. And I know they're right, but it causes a disruption, and I don't want it to be right. Like, I want it to say no. Like, you. And it was like these people with these pigs and the whole town who heard about it. What happened? What happens if I easily forgive somebody, right? What happens if I open up my home to someone who could be a danger and they experience love, they experience acceptance, and their life could be changed? I could be killed too. That could be the other thing. But then I get to see Jesus face to face, and so it's all right. Don't worry about that. Because it's okay for me. But what happens if I allow these disruptions that Jesus talks about to take place? Good things usually. If I forgive easily and share grace and mercy where it doesn't need to be or where it shouldn't be in our normal minds, like, it brings forgiveness and healing. If you've ever been in that situation where you had to offer forgiveness to somebody, sometimes there's tears, there's nervousness, there's whatever, but I mean, at the end of it, there's always a freedom that is felt. I've experienced it a few times in my life. I see heads nodding. I see some of you guys have experienced it too. But what do these people with the pigs do? They had an opportunity to celebrate and embrace the fact that God's kingdom had broken into their land, the non-Jewish land, and that this God who took on flesh had come into their land and actually helped them out. Like, he just solved the problem for them. They didn't have to avoid this guy anymore. They didn't have this crazy guy. His life was changed. They could have celebrated that. But the disruption was so great that he's like, no, go, can you please leave? And so Jesus left. He didn't argue. He just left. Side note, he did tell the guy who wanted to leave with him, and you can imagine, he appreciates what Jesus did. He wants to be a follower of Jesus. He wants this to be like now part of his life, and it is a part of his life because it's changed him. He wants to go. And Jesus said, no, go back to the 10 cities and tell everybody and what God has done for you. And so he did. So the only reason I bring it up is because sometimes we overthink telling people about Jesus. We think we got to have like the Bible down and we got to have all this stuff down. It's just as simple as telling somebody what Jesus did. I've been sitting with Willie. In fact, I remember one time I was sitting with Willie in, what's that restaurant down there across from the Pete's, yeah. And a logging buddy of his came up, and they were just chatting, and Willie just talking to this guy, and it just naturally comes out about how he used to be an angry man, and God had changed his life. That's all Jesus asked this man to do, just share with people what God has done. It's not a theological dissertation. What has God done for you? How is your life different because of Jesus than what it used to be? But these people, these other people, besides the man who had been healed, they couldn't take the disruption in their economy or in the flow of their society or whatever it was. And they say, just please leave. And he left. And sometimes that's our reaction. Because we have voices talking to us, sometimes from inside, sometimes off the TV screen, sometimes off the computer screen, sometimes in our home, whatever it is, who's talking, who's saying, no, that's not right. You don't let the outsider in. You don't love the person who doesn't love you back. You don't forgive your enemies. You don't give away all you have to follow Jesus. Because that's a disruption from the American dream or from Friar's dream or whatever it is. And how sad that would be to see Jesus sail away when he was right there. That's what we get to do as a church, is we get to follow that. As individuals, we get to follow that. We get to celebrate when Jesus has changed someone's life. We get to celebrate when there's brokenness and someone's wronged me, but I can forgive them, and because I forgave them, it may not happen overnight, but God changes their hearts. Or maybe he doesn't. But what he does do is change your heart when it happens. And that's enough to be celebrated. But there's this thing in Mark that I really got into Mark because I wanted to focus more on the miracles. As I get deeper into it, like the Holy Spirit's pulling a different direction because there's more to it than just the miraculous. Like the miraculous was blocked for some people because they didn't want the disruption. God made himself available to do the miraculous, though. He made himself accessible. He was able. Those questions we ask on the goodness and ability of God have been and are continually answered for them and for us continually. Sometimes we see it as disruption and we don't have anything to do with it. Other people celebrate it and it shifts their life. And I think we find ourselves in times where we do both of those things. May we more often be the people who celebrate the disruptions that God brings. So let's pray. God, we are God, we're not perfect, and we're thankful that you don't call us to be perfect. God, many times we don't want the disruption. We don't want the inconvenience of change. So God, thank you that your mercy is bigger than our sin in that area. God, would we be able to see the miraculous and celebrate it, even when it causes extreme disruption in our lives? God, would you move our hearts to a place to see where there is need that we have looked away from because of the disruption that it has? Let us move into it trusting that you will answer.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you would like more information, please visit us at www.mosaiceasley.org.